Okay, so last week we left off with Shitas HaRambam about Tamei Mitzvos, and we had a suggestion about how to relate to the stira between Mishneh Torah and Yad HaChazakah. Now I'd like to discuss a very hard question, and we'll try our best to understand it, which is actually a stira in Ramban about what the purpose of mitzvos are. So last week we saw, this relates to this week's Parshas HaShavua, the Ramban saying in a number of places that the purpose of mitzvos are for us. One place where he says it is the pasuk that says that mitzvos are l'toiv lach, they're for our good. We saw he quoted the pasuk in Iyov, Lamed Hey, that tells us if you've sinned, have you harmed Hashem? If you've done mitzvos, have you helped him? What have you given him? So clearly, mitzvos are for our sake. They're not for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And the Ramban even said that that is obvious from the Psukim, and it's also obvious Misvara, because HaKadosh Baruch Hu lacks nothing. So how is it even remotely conceivable that we would give him something? So it seems obvious that that mitzvos are for us, not for Hashem. Okay, that seems very compelling. But we will see elsewhere, in especially Kabbalistic sources, including the Ramban himself, where you see the other things. So that brings us to the first Bar Makom for today, which is from Shmos Perek Chaf Tes, Halach and Pasuk Tes Vav, Amem Vav. The Ramban writes over here, Yesh b'inyan sod gadol. In this matter, there's a great secret. Ki kafi pshat hadavar, Hashchina shor b'Yisrael, tzorech hedyot v'lo tzorech gavoa. According to the Pashup Shat, the Hashras Hashchina b'Yisrael is for us, not for him. That's interesting that he uses this lashon of Pshat HaDavar. Pshat HaDavar over here means the philosophical understanding of the matter. In other words, a simple understanding of the matter. That we, Hashem lacks nothing, so obviously mitzvos are for us, right? That's the Pshat HaDavar. Not the literal reading of the pasuk. We already pointed out, as we saw last week, that the literal reading of the pasuk sounds like we are giving something to Hashem. But that's not the pshat ha-davar. The pshat ha-davar is based off of the philosophical truth, which is that God lacks nothing. And therefore, in doing mitzvos, we're giving him nothing. They're entirely for us. That's the pshat ha-davar. So he says, even though the pshat ha-davar is that the hashras ha-shechina b'Yisrael is tzorech hedyot, meaning for us, not for him. Like, and again, not just shot philosophically, but shot from all those psukim we saw last week. Aval, hu kinyan shamar hakasuv Yisrael asher b'chas pa'er. However, there are psukim that allude to a secret, something else. The pasuk says, Yisrael in whom I am glorified, meaning to say that we do kaviyachol give something to a Kadosh Baruch Hu, because he is glorified through us. The Amar Yehoshua, Uma ta'aseh l'shimcha gadol. Yehoshua says, what about your great name? In other words, the Chilul Hashem harms, it would seem, if we read it literally, Hashem, because that's a Chilul Hashem, right? Ma ta'aseh l'shimcha gadol. Upsukim rabim ba'ukein. There are many psukim that say that, maybe like Moshe's arguments that B'nai Yisrael should be saved, because otherwise it would have been Chil Hashem, le'enei amim. Sounds like we're doing something for Hashem. Another pasuk he quotes, Iva l'moshev lo. So Hashem desires a place to reside. So if we use this word, taiva, with respect to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, he is Iva l'moshev lo, he is a taiva for a place and a habitation on this world. So the mashmos is that he needs it, that we're, or if he doesn't need it, at least we're giving him something. Po eshev ki ivisiha, I will dwell here because I've desired it. Once again, the implication is that we're giving something to our Kadosh Baruch Hu, the kasuv ha'aretz kor. So what's the Ramban saying? Ramban's saying that there are many psukim that allude to a deeper secret, that he desires our companionship, that he wants us to welcome him, that through us he is glorified. This is sometimes known as Havodat Tzarech Gavoha. You'll see that in many Sfarim, like the Nefesh HaChayim. Havodat Tzarech Gavoha is as opposed to Tzarech Hedyot. So that's what the Ramban says. Pshat HaDavar is that the Havodat Tzarech Hedyot. But the Sod, right, the Ramban says this is a Sod Gadol, the Sod is Avodat Tzarech Gavoha. In what ways are we giving him something through our doing our mitzvos? What does he get out of them? Some sources emphasize kingship. It is only when humans willingly accept his rulership that he's a melech b'lo'am. And therefore, since our mitzvos reflect our acceptance of his monarchy, he desires our mitzvos in a certain sense. Along similar lines, the Sukkim that the Ramban cites shows that Hashem desires a dwelling place on earth. One source that especially Chabad sources emphasize is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that when we do mitzvos, we create a dira betachtonim, a habitation on this earth that's for Hashem. A habitation in the lower realm. And it's interesting because even though the sources that the Pesukim that the Ramban cites seem to focus a little bit more on the Mikdash, but again, these Chabad sources, this was actually a major theme in the thinking of the Seventh Rebbe, argue that these sources should be understood more broadly. I think there's a Medrash in Shir HaShirim Rabbah. The Shir HaShirim Rabbah is the beginning of the fifth parak, because the Pasuk says in the beginning of the fifth parak, Basi Lagani, I have come to my garden. And that's a reference to the inauguration of the Beis HaMikdash. And again, some of these sources emphasize that this phrase of Basi Lagani implies that my gan is my own garden, my own dwelling, and my own dwelling is on this world. And that implies that the way it's understood is perhaps this world was God's dwelling place. When we sinned, he left. And when we do mitzvos, so then we make for him a residence on this world. And he, even though, again, the way there's a Medrash Tanchuma in Parshas Naso that says that even though Hashem, as it were, could be in heavens, he desires some type of dira in this world, in this lowly world. And that's one idea. Other makoros emphasize love. Without us, so there's no one to love Hashem, or Hashem's love for us is unrequited. It's when we do mitzvos that he loves us. Kabbalistic sources talk about how mitzvos affect some type of divine harmony in the upper realms. Whatever it is, there are many sources like this Ramban that we just read that seem to indicate that we are doing something for him by doing mitzvos. Now, we have to emphasize a number of things. First of all, none of this reflects or relates to his true essence or the ultimate cause for his decision to build the world. And there are several reasons why that has to be true. First of all, by definition, we can't relate to or understand his essence or relate to the ultimate purpose for his decision to build the world. We can't, as finite beings, we can't grasp the infinite. Our perspective, which is from within the universe, can't possibly perceive God's perspective, which is outside of the universe and the creator of the universe. So all that notwithstanding, Hashem gives us some type of window into understanding him. And that's what these sources are. Not him as he is, but still some aspect. So returning to the Ramban, the question we have to ask is how could the Ramban endorse these two opposite perspectives? is, in other words, on the one hand, the Ramban says that mitzvos are entirely for us. And on the other hand, he's saying, no, that we do mitzvos for Hashem, or at least on some level, havoda tzorach gavoa. So we're going to consider two approaches. The first approach, I don't think is correct, but I'm just going to say it first, because I think it'll help us better understand the second approach. So one possible answer is to suggest that the Ramban presents two perspectives on mitzvos. One is the purpose of mitzvos from our perspective, and one is, to the extent we can understand it, the perspective of mitzvos from Hashem's perspective. From God's perspective, to the extent that we could understand it, mitzvos are entirely for us. He lacks nothing. That was the Ramban that we saw last week. And while this is true, you know, if we think about that for too long, we could really become sort of egotistical spiritual hedonists. I mean, like everything is for me, me, right? Why do I do mitzvos for me? L'tov lach. And if that's the way we think, then we'll really lack a meaningful relationship with the Ribbono Shel Olam. We'll only be takers. We'll offer nothing in return. As we saw a little bit last week, our motivation for doing mitzvot should not be anticipation of getting reward, that we know it's going to come, but it should be lishma. So therefore, these other sources, like the Ramban we saw today, is telling us that how we should think of doing mitzvos. The way we should think of doing mitzvos is we should think, oh, we are giving something to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Oh, senachas ruach liyotzro. By doing mitzvos, we are giving something to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Like the Gemara over here in Brachos says, Yedzayin Amid Aleph, that Asher Mishagabal HaTorah, Va'amalo BaTorah, Va'osin Nachas Ruach Liyotzro. Then when we do mitzvos, we're giving nachas to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Just like a kid who brings nachas to his parents when the parents see how nicely the kid is doing. And therefore, that's why we do mitzvos. We should think that way. When we daven for Hashem's unity, right? Look how many tefillos we have that are for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Yizkava, Lizkava, Shmei Rabba, Yehei Shmei Rabba. When we daven for that, as though Ki'ilu, he is pained by this disrepute. So what we're saying is that's what we should think, Now, the problem with this Mahalich is that it's basically sort of like self-deception, right? We're saying, well, Alibid MS, the truth of the matter is really we give him nothing. It's all for us. But if we think in those terms, then we're going to become a very, egotistical. So therefore, really, you know, we trick ourselves and we say, oh, we're giving him something. But, you know, that doesn't really work very well. I mean, is it true or is it not true? And we can't live in deception. And I'll even be mosif that in the Lashon of the Ramban, it's schwer to say that. Because remember, the Ramban said, the pshat ha-davar is that we gain, that Hashem gives nothing, that mitzvot are entirely for us. The sod is that we give him something. But the emes is, if this first approach is right, it should be fakert, right? The pshat ha-davar should be that we're giving him something. And the deeper thing is that we're giving him nothing. So I want to say a little differently. There's a gain, and we're not going to read it inside now, but the gain says that Hashem gives us the opportunity to actually give him something, as it were. In other words, without us, there is no one to acknowledge his existence, his greatness, to be mamlechem. So Hashem gives us the opportunity to give him something. In this reality in which he created, we are actually giving him something. And in so doing, we deserve the reward we ultimately get. So this is the greatest act of beneficence. Now, it's similar to the first approach because it's true that ultimately Hashem lacks nothing. But it differs in the sense that we're not actually fooling ourselves. The truth is that God created a reality whereby we can give him something. This is our reality because we exist in a world that he created. And within that reality, we can give him nachas and glory and joy. And without us, he doesn't have those. It's not just like a figment of our imagination, like we said in the first pshat. It's real, just like we're real, because it's a reality that he created. But we also must be aware that there's another way of looking at things, which is also true, in a sense, truer. And from this perspective, nothing exists besides HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Ein od milvado, mamish. If you take a look at the Nefesh HaChaim, which you have over here, sort of expresses this idea, right? Nefesh HaChaim Shah Gimel, Perek Dalet. Ve'inyan, ki vadai ha'emes, shemetzido yizbarach, gam ata achar shebarach v'chidesh ha'ilamos, v'rtzono, hu memale kol ha'olamos, v'amekomos, v'abrios, kulam, v'shivui gamor, v'achtos pashat, ve'in od milvado kimashmo mamish. The truth of the matter is, Einod Milvado Mamish. He's Mimale Kol Ha'olamos. Equally, the same. There's no difference. No difference between the bathroom and the base medrash. He's Mimale Kol Ha'olam Kulo. He doesn't benefit from our mitzvos, the Nefesh HaChaim writes, because really, he lacks nothing. And to suggest that we could even give him something is only almost heretical, because it implies that he's lacking. It implies that he could benefit from our services. It implies that he could change, which is also false, and Yeshem Lo Shinisi. It implies that he changed when he created the world, which is false. It implies that he changed when we do mitzvot, which is false. In reality, he is not changed through creation at all. But, says the Nefesh HaChaim, we can't think in those terms, at least not for a long time. Awareness of this idea, for a moment, Nefesh HaChaim says, is valuable. But if we think about it for too long, then we could be harmed. And it's dangerous, and it's usher. And this is a very fascinating idea that we're willing to say both. Take a look again at the Nefesh HaChaim. Nefesh HaChaim over here brings this idea from the Rokeach. And it says like this, B'mufla mimcha al tachkor, don't investigate things that are above you, that are beyond you. Zeshkas b'resh b'raisa, b'sefer yitzira, hashav yayotzer al mochono, Hu hayotzer kol v'chulei. Ubebraisa acheres v'imratz libcha shuv l'makom shelakach nemar v'chayos ratzo v'shov. What does this all mean? Says Nefesh HaChaim. Perush. Kshetachshov b'libcha ala borei ha'olam mahu. When you think about what HaKadosh Baruch Hu really is, v'echani yasu b'chol makom and how he's m'mali kol ha'olam kulo mamish b'shivui gamur u'maisev klo b'chol makom u'maisev Blom picha miladaber. So shut your mouth, close your mouth. Vilibcha milahara, and don't think about this. Hasera machshava milibecha. Take away the thought from your heart. Vimratz libcha l'machshava zos. And if you start thinking in these terms, chusha umaher, v'al teharher, v'shuv liyichud mekomo shalolam. So go back. Lavodasu liraso. V'al davar zeh, nichras brish. There's a bris not to think about a Kodesh Baruch Hu in this way. The Nefesh HaChaim says that's pshat in ratzo v'shov. Even the malachim would sort of go forward and then return, because we can't think in these types of terms. So he's telling us like this. In reality, he is memali chal olam kulo b'shivui gamor. There's nothing besides him, absolutely. But we can't think about that for too long. And that's what he says. Vavshabit emes shemitzido yisparach hamastigatz muso hu melochol ha meloes hakol beshva gemura. Even though the emes is that he fills everything with absolute equality, velo shem chatzitza velo shem chiluk v'shinui mekomos klal rak hakol achdos pashut kikodem abriya. Nothing changed before the bria and after bria. There's absolute oneness. There's nothing besides him. Aval ein anachnu yicholim. But we're not allowed, able to. V'gam lo rishinu, nor are we allowed to. Likanis klal is bonin bina b'zeh, to think about it. B'zeh inyen, v'noi ralei de lasig, eich adon yachid baruch hu, melo chol, melo asakol, v'chol amakom esbachtos pashut, v'shivu gamor, chalila v'chalila. Right? So if a person begins to contemplate how God fills all worlds without denying that reality, he's saying you have to return to a halachic perspective. What do I mean by halachic perspective? In the halachic perspective, there are chilukim, there are machitzos. There's a difference between a makom tamei and a makom tari. A lot of think about Torah in a base medrash and not in the bathroom. There are differences. And therefore, we need to go back. We need to go back to a reality that we occupy. It is a true reality. And again, awareness of that reality is something that's okay. That's a good thing, but you just can't think in those terms for too long. So what does he mean, right? If there's nothing but God before he created the universe, and also creation didn't change him in any way, then there's still nothing but him. The problem is, if you think about that for too long, then you'll basically say that you don't exist. And ultimately, it is a paradox. Meaning to say, I'll get to your question in a second, Zachariah. Yeah. It's a paradox in the sense that how is it possible that we exist and yet he's unchanged? And that is part of the problem. That's part of the reason why we can't think in those terms. So therefore, imratz libcha shave. So just to go back to our point, and I'll take your question. How is this different than the first perception, the first mahalis we said? Because it's not just an act of self-deception in order to achieve some ethical goal. God truly created a reality in which we can give him something. It is a true reality. It is our reality. And just because a different reality also exists, that doesn't mean that this reality isn't true as well. And in the reality that we occupy, we could give him something. And true, we're aware of a deeper reality, but that's not, and in that deeper reality, we can't give him something. But in the reality that we exist in, so that mitzvos do something, there's a purpose for mitzvos. The Nefesh Chaim goes out and he quotes all those same makoros that the Ramban quotes, the Pasuk in Iyov, and the Medrash about Ma'ech Baslai. All those midrashim, and he says the same thing. All those, the pasuk in Iyov is reflecting the deeper reality, but the halachic reality, which is where we should, for the most part, keep our minds. So we are able to give him something. He created a reality whereby we could give him something. Now I want to elaborate a little more on this, but first let me take your questions, yeah. Zachariah.
Yeah. So could one argue that the Ramban actually is a little bit sort of the opposite of this? The Ramban believes that the pshat perspective, which you can argue is appropriate for the Hamon, that's a basic perspective, is, you know, mitzvos are l'tov lach, and it's in the psukim, right? And right. While the sod, which is only for a few people to appreciate, is this kind of like nefesh haChaim, you're actually giving something to it. While nefesh haChaim is exactly the opposite, that the healthy everyday perspective is this extremely kind of, that you're actually giving something to Hashem. And you're right, the background knowledge, the essence of Hashem, Itzumo Shel Hashem, you should have a basic, a little bit of an awareness, but that's not really how to look at it. Like, aren't those exact opposites?
So I agree with what you're saying, and I'm not sure of the answer. I hear the way you're saying it, and I think you... My intuition was also that way. There's two reasons why I didn't say it that way. Number one is because I don't understand how that makes sense, which might not be an issue, and lots of things I don't understand. Number two is I got the impression that the Nefesh HaChaim thinks, at the very least, that he's trying to explain the Ramban. Because he quotes all the same makoros as the Ramban, and he says it this way. So at the very least, what I would say is, it seems to me that the Nefesh HaChaim wasn't understanding the Ramban the way you're saying it, but I do fully understand why you said it your way, and why that, in a way, in a sense, seems to be more meduyak. I want to add something here, which I think will help us understand this Nefesh HaChaim. We need a little bit of terminology, and these are things that are certainly above us, but perhaps we could understand a little bit. So again, what did we say, or at least what did the Nefesh HaChaim say? That mitzvos the Nefesh HaKadosh distinguishes between two perspectives, Atzmuso Yisborach and the way in which we perceive him. And again, Nefesh HaKadosh says, generally, when we are discussing the Ribono Shel Olam, we're not describing his essence, we're not describing as he existed prior to creation. There's no way to describe that, and he didn't change. But creation allows us to describe him as we perceive him from our incomplete perspective, right? That's what he was saying until now. You know, I just want to point out, actually, before I go on, let me just show you why I was saying that I think the Nefesh HaKadosh is reading Ramban the way I was saying it. So let's just take a look in the Nefesh HaKadosh. This is again where it says Shar Beis Perek Dalet. I read where it's bolded, and I think you'll see what I was saying. The Gam Shelefi Bechinas Atzmuso Yisborach Bilti Hischabruso El Haolamos Ein Makom LeTorah Mitzvos Klal. Even though with respect to Atzmuso Yisborach there is no makom for Torah Mitzvos, and he quotes all the psukim of the Ramban. Again, that's that pasuk also quoted by the Ramban. Ki la'atzmus adon kol baruch hu, kol ma'isa adam atova, hi imra'a, enan nogeb lo be'atzim klal chas v'shalom. Our actions have no impact on him. V'hum ha'amarom z'albed v'reishas rabba, again, quoted by the Ramban. Imras Hashem Tzerufa, V'gomer, Amit Rav, Lo Nitnu Mitzvos El Tzarif Ben Esabrios. V'chi Ma'echbes Leila Kodesh Baruch Hu, L'misha Shochet Min HaTzaver, O Min HaShochet Min HaOref, V'chulei. So I think that's where I'm coming from. I'll point out, by the way, you see this idea in many Sfarim, not just in Nefesh HaChaim. One place where you see it in the Tzemach Tzedek's Derech Mitzvosecha, he writes, I'll just read you one more source before we get back to what I wanted to say in the Nefesh HaChaim. The Tzemach Tzedek writes, and I didn't give you this. The Amnam be'emes tshuvas davar zeh, addressing the same question, gamkin is bar muvan lamaskil heitev bedvarim hanau be'inyan atzimtzum v'hu. Ki kvar amarnu she be'atzmuso ein hispa'alus klal. When it comes to atzmuso, there's no effect. Ve'eino lo, and look, he's not affected, he's not changed. Ve'eino lo koes v'lo sameach. Ki hu mis'ala u'misromein, I'll call midos elu. All these descriptions of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's emotions are in shaykh to atzmuso, which is above all this. U'v'erech zeh ne'mar im tzadak damatiten lo. And again, about Atzmuso Yisborach, it says, Im tzadakta matitein lo, v'rabu b'shacha matasebo, sheina mitzvos averos, tovzim makom klalios hu Yisborach mispael be'atzmo mehem, v'gam be'erko lo yitein hispa'alos, u'mashu sameach, mimayse ha-tzadikim, v'koes al-reshayim, ein ze be'amitas Atzmuso. So you see here the Tzemach Tzedek, who is the third Lubavitcher Rebbe, I think, saying the very, very same thing as an Nefesh HaChaim Mamish, came out the same words. I should point out that, shockingly, I think, there are some later Chabad texts that imply that somehow or another the Nishmas Yisrael can affect the Atzmuso Yisborach. This relates to some of the very radical theology in the seventh Lubavitcher Rebbe. You could see it in his very famous essay on Basi Lagani, which I sort of alluded to before. Some Chabad thinkers say this wasn't just the Chiddush of the seventh Rebbe, it's alluded to in earlier Rebbes, though I showed you that the Tzemach Tzedek clearly didn't say this way. This is a very interesting question in terms of Chabad theology, but not for now. Okay. So let's go back to what we're trying to say. So what did we see in the Nefesh HaChaim? That prior to creation, there was nothing but God. How then does Hashem create the universe? Which of course seems to change something that's unchangeable. And moreover, how do we account for the imperfections and even evil that we perceive in the universe if God is completely good and completely perfect. So it's very interesting because if you look both at the Sifrei Kabbalah as well as the Mor Nevuchim, the rationalist thinkers, they're both trying to address this question. Take a look at Mor Nevuchim Chelek Beis Perek Yud Zayin. The way the Mekubalim say it is that somehow or another, God created a space to allow for creation without any way diminishing himself. And that's the concept of Tzimtzum, that he created a space, and in this space, going back to our initial point, we're able to give God something. So we asked before, can we give him something or not? The answer is L'gabi Atzmuso, we can't. But in the space in which he created, we can. So ultimately, God is unaffected by creation, right? When we think about the Ein Sof, which means God's unending existence, or Hashem's existence prior to any self-manifestation. I should point out, by the way, Ein Sof, which you see a lot, is not a description, but it's a non-description, right? Infinity, that's what Ein Sof means, doesn't describe what is, it describes what isn't. There's no finite, infinite. There's no end. It's an acknowledgement that we can't define and thereby limit him in any way. So from the perspective of Ein Sof, Atzmuso, whatever you call it, by definition, mitzvos don't change him. In this reality that he created, Al Yedei the Tzimtzum, so then in that reality, we can. And Rav Chaim Voloshiner explains, that's why our prayers address God, but not as he is, meaning to say unconnected to the world or unaffected by prayers, but God as he relates to the world. So this is very important just to understand what tefillah is. Again, just we'll read a little bit from the Nefesh HaChaim. Ela shekol kavanas libenu b'chol ha-brachos v'tfilos tzarech shetia la'atzmos ein sof baruch hu mitzad hischabruso kirtzono yisbaruch el ha'olamos. Our tfilos are addressing Hashem insofar as he relates to the world. Shemitzidam kol ha-toarim v'ashemos mischalfim lif'ol u'lehamshich bahem or v'ashbas kedusha me'atzmo kefi his orus hamagia alehem mimaisi ha'adam, because in that world that he created, he is affected by us, by our mitzvos, by our tfilos, and the like. Okay. So, again, I apologize for that. This is very difficult to understand. And it is a bit above us. And in a minute, we're going to talk about whether we should even think about things that are above us. But before we get there, just one more point. So Nefesh HaChaim explains that this idea that he's just presented explains two descriptions of HaKadosh Baruch Hu that are found in the Zohar. One description is Memale Kol Almin, he fills all worlds. And the other description is Soviv Kol Almin, that he surrounds all worlds. Which one is it? Does he fill all the worlds such that there's no place devoid of him? Les asar panui minei, there's no empty space. Or is the pshat that he surrounds our world, leaving us space to exist? So Reb Chaim Voloshiner says, again, we have to distinguish between God's perspective and ours. From God's perspective, to the extent we could understand it, he fills all worlds. There's no place devoid of him. And therefore, there's no place for any sort of independent existence. In a sense, from this perspective, there is no place for free will. Nefesh HaChaim writes, there's no place for free will because free will implies will that's free of him, that's independent of him. And that's in that reality. Nefesh HaChaim quotes the Arizal in Sefer Arba Meo Shekel Kesef, that says, "V'makom yadiyah leka b'chira, v'makom b'chira leka yadiyah," sort of a paraphrase, that in a place where there is yadiyah, meaning Hashem knows everything, he's not limited, he's not bound, there's nothing besides him, so leka b'chira, from the perspective of Atzilus, let's call it for now, there's no b'chira. From the perspective of b'chira, which is in our world, in our reality, then there's no yadiyah. Very different than the Rambam's answer to the question of the stira between foreknowledge and free will. The Arizal answers that it is a stira in a sense, but there's two realities. In one reality, there's yadiyah. In the other reality, there's b'chira. How do we relate to HaKadosh Baruch Hu within our reality? Within a reality that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is so veiv kol almin, that he surrounds us, leaving a place for us to exist. And that's true, even as we realize that, in a deeper sense, he's mimale kvodo, mimale kol haaretz kvodo. And so again, that's how the Nefesh HaChaim, at the very least, addresses the stira between the sources that say that we give something to HaKadosh Baruch Hu in doing mitzvos and the sources that say he's totally unaffected by doing our mitzvos. Now, I want to address now a different question relating to all this, which is, you know, the Nefesh HaChaim told us something very interesting. He implied that there is some value in occasionally considering how God gets nothing from our mitzvos. To remember that, you know, before he created the world, there was nothing besides him and that he didn't change. And the Nefesh HaChaim told us that when you think that way, you can't think that way for too long. You should have sort of an awareness of that idea for a moment. That's valuable. But thinking about something that's so paradoxical will be dangerous. So the question I want to think about with you for a moment is Mimanashach. Do I understand it or not? If it's something that I can understand, so then let me understand it. Why do I have to run away from it? And if it's something that I can't understand, so then what am I bothering thinking about it for at all? Why is Nefesh HaChaim writing about it? So one idea that we could think about is like this. The truth is that there are all sorts of ideas that we could understand that such an idea exists, even if we can't really wrap our heads around it. There's a way to understand HaKadosh Baruch Hu using our cognitive abilities. That's the main way we understand HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We use our seichel to try to understand HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But we could also appreciate that there's something that's well beyond our seichel that is true as well. And though we can't understand it, we could understand at least that there's something like that which exists. So we have to have this balance. On the one hand, our main perspective, we have to remain grounded. But, you know, maybe there's a bad mushel, but, you know, we have to stay grounded. We have to stay on land. We're people, we're not fish. But if you could learn how to swim, then you could manage a little bit for a short period of time in the water and experience a totally different reality. Can't last there for too long. And so you have to return to a place of safety. But you could be there a little bit. So if you look at this farm, they explain that there are two types of lights that emanate from creation. One is called the Or HaPnimi, and one is called the Or HaMakif. Or Pnimi means the inner light, and Or HaMakif means the surrounding light, Lakif is to surround. So Or Pnimi refers to the light that we can't understand. Or Makif refers to that which is above us. Sorry, Or Pnimi is what we can't understand. It's the light that's sort of inside the world. Or Makif, on the other hand, is that which surrounds us, that's beyond our cognitive abilities. But we're still able to relate to it on some level. right? That's why the Arizal writes, ha-pnimi katan min ha-makif, or pnimi is smaller than the makif, because the pnimi is what we can relate to. It's the inner light, and it's smaller than the surrounding light. Something that surrounds is bigger. There's no comparison between the minimal amount that human beings are able to understand and that which is beyond us. But there's still, we long to connect to something that which is above us. And so there's value, the Nefesh Chaim is saying, in thinking about God, to appreciate that he lacks nothing, that our mitzvahs are meaningless to him. Even though, at the same time, we recognize that relating to God in that way is something that is totally beyond us. You know, there's a statement from Reb Nachman. Reb Nachman writes that sometimes pursuing something that you could never achieve is valuable, because the experience of trying to understand HaKadosh Baruch Hu, even though you know you could never succeed, it is valuable. It's a chase that's valuable, and the chase yields fruits, even though you know you'll never reach your goal. But all that's true, as long as you remember that you can't really understand it. In other words, you can't trick yourself into thinking that you can fully get it. Maybe I'll show you one piece from Tanya that expresses this, but I didn't put it in your Makoro sheets. So now I'm just going to put it in the chat. And if you could just take a look at it that way. Okay, so I hope everyone got this. One second. Oops. So you got it? Okay, good. So let's take a look. Dehainu, this is from the Shar Yichud Emuna, Perek Tes. Dehainu lomar, shuhuram v'nisa v'nisala iloi rav me'od, mimadregas ha-chachma, v'lo shech klal yachis etzlo shum inyan ha-mis yachis l'chachma, filu b'derach ma'ila v'iloi rav, kigon lomar alav sh'i'afshar l'shum Nivra el yonim v'tachton amazik hachmaso, o mahuso, ki inyan asaga misyaches v'nofel al davar chachma, v'secha lo mar she'efshar lahasig, o i'efshar lahasig, v'pnei omeh kamusak. Aval kodesh baruch hu, shehu l'mala min ha'seichel, v'achachma lo shayach kla lo mar bo, she'efshar lahasigo, v'pnei omeh kamusak, ki eino b'vchinas hasaga kla. Even to say, I can't understand God because he's too deep to understand is false, because that would imply that he's shaykh to understanding. I'm just not smart enough. There are certain things that, you know, they're shaykh to understanding. I'm just not good at them, good enough to understand them. That's, we can't say that about HaKadosh Baruch Hu, because that implies that it's nitan for understanding. The omer alav, she'ef shel asigo, hu ke'omer al to say that we can't understand HaKadosh Baruch Hu is to say, like, I can't touch algebra, like feel it, right? It doesn't make sense. Right? I can't touch algebra because it's so deep. What do you mean you can't touch algebra? Algebra isn't something physical that you could touch. To say I can't understand HaKadosh Baruch Hu because he's so deep is saying the same thing. It implies that it's nitan for understanding, which is totally false. It's laughable. Shechush ha-mishush eno misyaches v'nofel ela al asiyas gashmis, because touching is something that only relates to something physical. Hanitfeses biyadayim. V'kacha mamish nechsheves l'gabi HaKadosh Baruch Hu madrigas ha-seichel v'asaga. Kasiya Gashmis. Understanding Kadosh Baruch Hu is like touching calculus. Vafilu asaga sichlis sheva olamos elyonim. No matter how elevated of chachma we're talking about. Vafilu madregas chachmas ilah hamechayas hakol kedasiv kulam bechachmas yisa. Even then, it's totally beyond. Okay. Now, so far, you know, I've sort of merged, you know, Chassidisha and Litvisha thought, right? I quoted the Nefesh Chaim, I quoted the Tanya, the Tzemach Tzedek, you know, okay. I want to make ha'ara that I noted, that I noticed, and I'm not sure of the answer, but I think it might be very telling, just in terms of understanding these terms. So we presented the Nefesh HaChaim's theory, if you remember, which is rooted in Kabbalah, he's quoting the Zohar and the Arizal and the like, that we can perceive God in two ways. Again, from the perspective that there's nothing besides God, and from the perspective that he created a world with space for us to exist, a space, as it were, that's devoid of him. Nefesh HaChaim, as we saw, uses this distinction to explain the stira in the Zohar between Memali Kol Almin and Soviv Kol Almin, that Memali Kol Almin is this deeper truth, Soviv Kol Almin is the way that we perceive him. We perceive him as outside, created space for us to exist. Now, fascinating, because if you look at the Alter Rebbe, he also agrees to these two perspectives. He says the same exact chakira. This is in Tanya, really Perk Memches to Nun Beis, and in Shari Yichud Emunah also Perk Zayin. But he writes the exact opposite use of the terms. He says that Soviv Kol Almin reflects the Ein Sof, which directly sustains all existence. There's no place devoid of him, right? What the Nefesh HaChaim called Memale Kol Almin. And from the perspective of Soviv Kol Almin, there's literally no space for anything besides him. And then there's the second perspective, as it were, where he constricts himself, allowing for the world to exist. And by limiting himself, he's able to fill all the worlds. And he fills the worlds in a way that they could tolerate. Right? This is part of the main chiddush of the Kabbalah Sari, that there was a shvira and then fine. And were he to fill all the worlds in a way in which he is, so they would be overwhelmed. So he limits his light and illuminates without overwhelming. So we could perceive him without being burnt. But simultaneously, he really surrounds all worlds and he continues to exist in this unlimited fashion. The chiluk between Or Pnimi and Or Makif that we said before is a little easier to understand in the Hasidish perspective, but not for now. So here's the kasha I want to think about. And I'll get to your question, Binyamin. The question is, how are we understand this debate between Reb Chaim Volozhiner and the Alter Rebbe? And I think we could take two approaches. We could say that it's merely technicality. Now, there's both thinkers make the exact same chakira, and they give the same solution to the same kasha, and they just differ in terminology, right? That's one way. They just differ in terminology. The other way is to say, no, you know, maybe this difference in terminology reflects a fundamental disagreement. So I saw in Reb Reuven Leuchter's commentary on the Nefesh HaChaim, he notes this stira, and he says that there is no fundamental disagreement. Both formulations are basically allow for the same answer, but at the same time, the way in which they use their terminology actually relates to the practical difference that is at the heart of the Hasidish and the Litvish divide. Because if you think about it this way, what emerges from the presentation of Reb Chaim Volozhiner is that our behavior must be governed by our perception. Our connection to God as he is has to be momentary and fleeting, with our immediately returning to grounded reality. Like he says, Bevchinas Ratzo Vashov, back and forth. You get there, you got to come back. Our focus in our Avodas Hashem is within the worlds in which God created, which we inhabit. That is our focus. Yeah, momentarily, you could think about something a little deeper. But where are we grounded? Where's our reality? Where should we be thinking? This world with distinctions and the like. The Alter Rebbe is almost fakert. We should try to connect to HaKadosh Baruch Hu while appreciating in reality there's nothing besides him. In other words, we should discover the holiness that exists everywhere. Of course, we have to keep the halacha. We affirm the distinctions that exist within the halacha, but we try to uncover the godliness in all that surrounds us. So whereas the Nefesh HaChayim discourages, you know, thinking about this too much, the Chabad perspective encourages contemplation on such points, some types of, you know, where you're talking about yourself in a certain sense. And that's why, though they both use the same distinction to answer the stira, but they use opposite terms that really reflect opposite approaches and directions. And again, I think perhaps that very much explains the differences to the extent that they exist in terms of the Avodas Hashem of the Hasidim and the Litvaks. Okay, Binyamin, I have a question. I just want to summarize what we said sort of over the last two shiurim, and then I'll take your questions. So what we've seen, I think, is that everybody, you know, many psukim, many mamari chazal, this idea that the purpose of mitzvos is for our goods. Like the pasuk says, l'tov lach. We've also seen that our motivation for doing mitzvos should not be focused on that. And we saw really three different ways why this is. Last week, we saw the comments of the Nefesh HaChayim of the Sefer Chinuch, who says that if we think about mitzvos as being l'tov lanu, so then we'll be self-centered and be focused on reward. So we should serve God out of love, not for the sake of remuneration. That's one reason why, even though mitzvos are l'tov lach, that's not something we should focus on. We should try to do it l'shma. We saw the perspective last week of the Maharal, who says, if you focus too much, even it's true, mitzvos are l'tov lach, but if you think about that, then you're just going to do it when you're in a mood, right? It could lead to the attitude that I'll do the mitzvos when they suit me, and if not, when not? After all, they're for me. And so therefore, Chazal also emphasize that we have to be mevatel ourselves. We have to mevatel our will unconditionally. Even if mitzvos are for us, the Torah demands submission and sacrifice. And finally, number three, what we saw today, which is what the Nefesh HaChayim says, that even though it's true that mitzvos are letov lach, but thinking about that for too long will cause us to lose our mind. And rather, we should think of mitzvos, generally speaking, within the reality that he created, in which we're able to give him something through our doing the mitzvos. So sort of three reasons, three different perspectives, three limitations on the concept of l'tov lach in a practical sense. Okay, Binyamin. Just last point, I guess. You know, I know today's shiur might have seemed very ungrounded and difficult to understand and the like. So we're not usually going to be doing this kind of stuff. I thought it was helpful to try to understand the Ramban and Nefesh HaChayim in this context. But if you found it a little bit too up there, so don't worry about it. Be'ezras Hashem, we'll get back to more straightforward things next week in Yirtzeh Hashem. Okay, Binyamin.
Yeah, the Nefesh HaChayim spoke about the Isser to contemplate some of these incomprehensible ideas. Mm-hmm. So is that just for like a practical reason, like to secure your sanity? Or is like the contemplation itself inappropriate? Like in a sense, you're being machnas ala kodesh pnima, like infringing on a boundary that's not really yours.
Great question. I think you see both of those points in the Nefesh HaChayim. Okay. Anybody else? Okay, I guess it was clear. Or maybe nobody understood anything. Okay. Yes.
Can I ask a question?
Yeah.
Is the difference between the first answer the Rebbe suggested for the Ramban that we can look at mitzvahs as benefiting Kadosh Baruch Hu, but that really just an illusion or something we tell ourselves. And the second, so the difference between that and the second answer, which is that there are two realities that exist. So like nikuda samach lokas between that, like whether we can accept paradoxes as part of theology and yeah, philosophy in general.
You could say that. In other words, what you're saying is the second Mahalich demands that we accept a paradox and the first doesn't. I think you could say that. That's not what I had in mind exactly, but I do think what you're saying, I certainly think that certainly like when you look at the Chabad thinkers, you definitely see that this second perspective is rooted in a paradox. So I think one perhaps could look at it that way. Yes, Roi.
Yeah, it's not really a question. I was just wondering if Rebbe minded repeating the exact terminology that was the machlokes between the Alter Rebbe and Nefesh Chaim.
Yeah. So the question is, how do you understand the difference between Solev Kol Almin and Mimali Kol Almin? It also relates to how to understand the difference between Or Makif and Or Panimi, but we'll just focus on Solev Kol Almin and Mimali Kol Almin because that's much easier. So the way that we'll start with the Nefesh Chaim understood that is that Solev Kol Almin is that Hashem surrounds the world and therefore leaves a space in for us to exist, right? Creating some type of at least illusion of a vacuum. And Mimali Kol Almin is the deeper reality whereby there's no place besides him. Ein od milvado mamash. So he literally fills all worlds, right? The Alter Rebbe said it fakert. He writes that Soviv Kol Almin reflects the Ein Sof, which Hashem directly sustain. There's no place devoid of him. Again, the way the Nefesh Chaim understood Mimali Kol Almin, there's literally no place besides God. That's Soviv Kol Almin. And then there's this second perspective where he, as it were, constricts himself and allows the world to exist. And in that sense, he's Mimali Kol Almin. So what does that have to do with Mimali Kol Almin means? It means he fills the world to the extent that they're able to be mekabel it. In other words, if he were to overwhelm the world would not be able to, but by fully revealing himself, it wouldn't be able to tolerate it. So he fills the world in a way which allows it to exist and not be overwhelmed. So he limits the light so that it could illuminate without overwhelming, so we could perceive him without being burnt. And that's what we mean when we say he's Mimali Kol Almin.
Thank you.
Sure. Okay. Everyone should have a good Shabbos. And
best thank you. Have a good Shabbos.
Shabbos.
Rebbe?
Yeah.
Yeah, so I could just as a follow-up. In general, is there a trend or two different like schools of thought in like Jewish philosophy as to like whether like my impression is based on like very limited actual learning and experience that like the Rambam never wants to accept like logical paradoxes in his philosophy but like other Mefarshim will accept paradoxes. Is that in general like two strains of thought?
I think there's something to that. Just to give the example that we had today about Yadin Bechira. So when the Rambam discusses the question of Yadin Bechira, he says that they're logically compatible. He says that we can't understand the answer necessarily because there's no stira between Yadiyah of Hashem and Bechira. But we can't understand the way in which God knows things. In other words, Rambam says, the way in which we know things, so then there is a steer between Yadiyah and Bechira. If I know what you're going to do tomorrow, then you can't freely do otherwise. But the way in which Hashem knows things, so there is no such steer. But he says, yeah, we can't really understand the way in which Hashem knows things. But fundamentally, these two things are logically compatible, even though we can't fully appreciate how. And the question is that fundamentally different than the answer that we said today from the Arizal, right? It's interesting. If you look at Reb Tzadok, Reb Tzadok argues that Rambam and Arizal meant the exact same thing. And he says that's what the Arizal meant when he said, Makom de'ikiyadiyya, lakabuchira ikiyadiyya, in other words. But I think the more simple understanding of the Arizal might be along the lines of what you're saying, which is that they're accepting this type of paradox. Now, I think you see it reflected in a couple of ways, and you could say it two ways, and I'm not sure which one is right. One way is to say, yeah, talk, it's a paradox. So, well, if it's a paradox, then how could that be? So the answer is, okay, what's a paradox? A paradox is only a problem within the rules of logic. And God is not limited by the rules of logic. The rules of logic are rules that we made up or we discovered. And there's no reason to presume that God is limited by logic. Now, it's interesting because the Rambam writes that God, I don't know if he would say God is limited by logic, but the logic is true. And yes, God can't do something illogical. When we say that Hashem is omnipotent or he's kol yachol, we're not saying that he could do anything. It means he could do anything theoretically possible, right? HaKadosh Baruch Hu can't destroy himself because he necessarily exists. He can't not exist. Hashem can't corporealize himself because it can be demonstrated that he's incorporeal. So logic plays a big role. Ad kedei kach, that the Rambam says it's foolish to think that God could do something that's theoretically impossible. Other thinkers, and certainly those that are more influenced by Kabbalah, don't think to take that approach. The Maharal writes this extensively, Rav Kook and others, Rav Tzadok, the Ishbitzer, they all say no, that he's not limited by logic. So once you say that, you know, logic is a human construct, and there's no reason why it would limit God, so then the existence of a paradox isn't particularly troubling, because the paradox is only true due to logic. And while we can't imagine logic not being true, that doesn't mean it's not true. So it's not the pshat that there's really a paradox. There is no stira. The stira would indeed contradict achduso yisparach, but it's ridiculous. We shouldn't be bothered by the existence of a paradox because paradoxes are within logic, and that's within our limited perspective. And there's no reason why we would assume that that should be ultimately true. You could also take a different approach in saying that it is a paradox in an achadami. But the weaker way of saying it is to say that it's only a paradox, kafima shenira lanu.
What was the difference between, meaning the...
Do we say it, reality, it is a paradox, or no, it looks like a paradox? Either way, we're saying paradox, you can't ask a stira on a Kadosh Baruch Hu because it might be paradoxical. But is the pshat that we're saying it really is paradoxical, or is the pshat that it seems paradoxical? And we shouldn't bother us that it seems to us paradoxical.
Oh, okay. There.
All right. Shkayach.
Good Shabbos.
Good Shabbos. Good Shabbos.